The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Yeah, I usually like to start the day, start the week with a bit of a snippet, but it's really tough under the current circumstances with the news so heavy weighing on us. The news this morning coming in from the Ukraine that the Russian forces seem to be very much closing in on Kiev and on Kharkiv. It seems as if though there have been explosions in those two cities reported this morning, and massive numbers of Russian troops gathering around those cities. The mayor of Kiev yesterday already said that the city had been really cut off from the outside world with Russian troops surrounding. So with all of that in mind, and of course with the additional stress and additional factor that we have here in Israel, that there are so many people from Ukrainian descent, people who have family and friends currently in Ukraine, and it's just very, very concerning indeed. So unfortunately, we have no choice but to really focus on that part of the news. And just before I continue, last week I was referring to Ukraine sometimes as the Ukraine.
There was a listener
who wrote in to ask about why I sometimes spoke about the Ukraine, and I appreciate that inquiry because it is grammatically and politically incorrect to call it the Ukraine. So we will call it Ukraine from now on, so thank you.
Yeah, so hold on, so we have to call it just Ukraine?
Correct.
So we drop the. Yeah, because I often find myself doing that as well. I wonder if it's a throwback to something where we talk about.
I think it is a bit of a throwback. I think that in the past it was somewhat acceptable to talk about the Ukraine, but that clearly, according to my recent research, is no longer the case at all. And in fact, they've even changed the spelling of Kiev quite recently. Once upon a time, we used to spell Kiev K-I-E-V. Now the common spelling is K-Y-I-V, which is really the Ukrainian spelling, which has been adopted in English as well.
Right. Okay. So, and the other one that I got wrong a little bit earlier this morning is I was talking about a friend of mine, and I said who's gone from Kiev to Lviv, to be as they're trying to get out through the Polish border. But apparently, you have to pronounce it Lviv. Lviv. That sounds French.
Lviv. Correct. Lviv. And even Lviv is very, very controversial because there is a Russian pronunciation which is more like Lvov, I think. And of course, that's not quite acceptable these days when talking about a Ukrainian city using Russian pronunciation. So it's all very, very sensitive indeed.
Yeah, very, very. All right, let's talk about Israel, and they've offered to mediate in the Ukrainian conflict. Yes, it is the Ukrainian conflict. I can say it because it's the conflict. Fine. Correct. You know, you've really made me very, very anxious this morning now, Anthony.
Well, I'm sorry about that, Howard, no but problem. We do need to be cautious and careful and conscious of these things.
Yes, we do.
But Israel has offered to mediate in the conflict. We understand that Prime Minister Naftali Bennett spoke to Russian President Zelensky on Friday when he specifically requested Israel to get involved and to be willing to mediate. In the words of President Zelensky, Israel is one of the only countries that Ukraine considers to be somewhat of a friend that also has positive relations with Russia. And of course, the Israeli government continues to do all that it possibly can in order to stay neutral, in inverted commas, in this particular conflict, because I think that the Israeli government really does support the Ukrainian side of this conflict, but is just very reluctant to come out and state that too loudly. And in so doing, in maintaining this neutral presence, neutral position, it has found its way, Israel has found its way into being considered as a potential mediator in the conflict. And we understand more than that, that Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett spoke yesterday to Russian President Vladimir Putin. We are told that a conversation took place around midday yesterday and lasted around 20 minutes. It was reported from the Kremlin as well that Prime Minister Naftali Bennett had offered the mediation services of Israel. There was some discussion around where any mediation might take place, where a meeting might take place between Ukrainian and Russian representatives. Initially, the Russian side demanded that the meeting take place on the border between Ukraine and Belarus. because Belarus is effectively part of the Russian war effort, Ukraine's government and Ukraine's president Zelensky declined to meet on the Belarus border and would prefer to have met in Israel itself, to have sent representatives from Ukraine and from Russia to Israel for that meeting. Ultimately, yesterday, he seemed to capitulate from that position, to back down from it and agree to send Ukrainian representatives to the Belarus border to make to hold those discussions with Russian diplomats who were apparently reported already to be there waiting to talk. One is not exactly sure what those talks might surround, because I'm still not quite sure what Russian President Putin's end game is. What is he trying to achieve? We know on the one hand that he's been very anti-NATO, and the prospect of NATO grabbing a foothold in Ukraine has been something of a concern to him. He's expressed that openly in the past. He's also warned Finland in recent days that Finland should also take note of what's happening, because they, the Russian Federation, the Russian government will not allow Finland to join NATO. So that was a very clear warning, even a threat against Finland if they attempted to join NATO. But I'm not sure that this is purely about NATO being on Russia's boundaries. I think that there's probably something a little bit more to it than this. And, you know, when you see the tragic loss of life and the very unfortunate events that are going on in Russia and in Ukraine, I'm sorry, especially around some of those cities in Ukraine and involving civilians in Ukraine, it's a very, very sad situation. And I'm still not quite sure why it is that President Putin feels that this war effort is worthwhile trying to pursue his endeavor of keeping NATO off Russia's borders. So if that's the end game, then I suppose we do see, we do understand where things are going, but I'm not sure how all of that's going to be agreed upon. And of course, the position for Israel is somewhat tenuous, because the role of peacemaker, of mediator, of third party in such conflicts is not one that's known to come out in shining colors. At the end of the day, there have been so many examples of countries that have attempted to mediate conflicts and have simply failed and come out with their tail between their legs, literally having lost ground, lost the war, lost face in the process of trying to mediate. I'm not quite sure why Israel would want to get involved in the middle, but unfortunately, it seems like there aren't that many countries around the world where who are willing at the moment to talk both to the Russian side and to the Ukrainian side, and at least are considered to be somewhat impartial by both parties. But I think that this is a disaster waiting for a place to happen for Israel to get involved. I can't see a positive outcome to that in the least.
It's interesting. I'd love your thoughts. 34519 or 0618951019. Anthony Reich saying he can't see the benefit to Israel of getting involved in this conflict, trying to mediate it. It is true that mediators very often are the ones that land up the most compromised. That said, maybe it is Israel's only way to try and manage this very, very difficult conflict. Moshe says, hi guys, can you clarify, Ukrainian President Zelensky, is he from the Holocaust survivors? Are both his parents Jewish? Is he a proud Jew or a hidden Jew? That is from Moshe. Moshe, what I understand, and Anthony, maybe you know more than me, he most definitely is from Holocaust surviving parents, and he is openly acknowledges his connection with his faith.
I think that's right. My understanding, and I'm subject to correction here, but I think that his Judaism comes through the paternal line, and therefore I'm not sure that he's 100% halachically Jewish as we would consider through the maternal line. But I think that if we use the Israeli standard, which is, does he have one Jewish grandparent, I think he may well qualify under the law of return. to be a citizen of Israel if he applied to do so. So he certainly comes from Jewish line. He has acknowledged that. He is not hidden it away at all. But I'm not sure that from a halachic, a purely halachic point of view, that he would be considered to be Jewish. But Howard, just back to your point about the mediation, and I think I agree with your point, because, you know, we've been asking the Israeli government, and the Israeli government has been asked by others as well, what is your contribution to this war effort? Where are you helping? And we understand that Ukraine did appeal to Israel for arms and ammunition, which that particular request, we understand, was refused. But Israel has put a plane load of humanitarian aid together, which will be sent to Ukraine, all kinds of things, medical supplies and sleeping bags and food, things like that, which are humanitarian help rather than military aid. And also, again, Israel treading a very, very cautious path in terms of how it's helping Ukraine, rather than to be blamed by Russia for becoming part of the Ukrainian war effort. But I think that ultimately, the only way that Israel can honestly say we've really tried to make an effort to get involved and to assist the situation is the mediation, because, you know, some humanitarian aid here and there is all very nice and well, but it doesn't really feel like a major contribution given the extent of things that are happening on the ground in Ukraine at the moment. And as I've said earlier, particularly in view of the advancing Russian troops on the Ukrainian cities of Kiev and Kharkiv. And it was an interesting suggestion by somebody who thought that former Prime Minister Netanyahu might be a good person for the Israeli government to nominate as a mediator between Russia and Ukraine.
I actually think it's a great idea. We know that he has a fantastic relationship with Putin, whatever that means. Maybe he is one person who can achieve this. As you know, I certainly used to be a Netanyahu fan. I'm not anymore, and I haven't been for the last while. But I do think that this is his forte. I think he could do very well. What do you think? 34519 or 0618951019. It would be interesting to see.
I think it's actually a very interesting suggestion. Mm. And like you know, I have my doubts about some of the things that former Prime Minister Netanyahu has been involved with, but you can't deny his personability and the fact that he has a very strong character and he has an ability to manage difficult situations and to convince people. And I think that that's probably what's needed right now, particularly somebody has some standing and potentially some weight that comes from, you know, comes behind him in terms of experience and knowledge of how to manage political situations. One of the other things that Israel is very much involved with is getting Israelis out of Ukraine. We did say that Israelis had been offered safe passage out of Ukraine before the conflict began. Most of them decided not to take up on the safe passage. Many of those planes returned back to Israel without any people, even though quite a number of planes had been chartered to rescue Israelis before the conflict began. Now, of course, people are scrambling for their lives and have suddenly decided that they actually would like to get out of Ukraine. All too little too late, because of course the airspace has been closed. We understand that many of those people are now making their way by road to Poland, to Romania, to Hungary, to neighboring countries. It's a very, very difficult border crossing because there's so many other people trying to do the same. We understand that you don't even have to potentially present your passport at the border crossing, that the border guards are allowing people to come through with almost any form of identification just to know who they are without necessarily having to present passports. And we do understand that the Israeli consular services have managed to get forces together in order to rescue Israelis from those locations, and also Ukrainians who've decided they would like to get out of the conflict and potentially make Israel their new home. Israel has been readying for the arrival of up to 10,000 new or limb from Ukraine arising from this particular conflict. Already approximately 1,000 or more have arrived, and massive preparations are being made to house them in temporary accommodation for now until more permanent accommodation can be found. So there's quite a big effort going on the ground in Israel right now in order to receive Ukrainian refugees, as they will be if they come running from the conflict, as many of them are trying to do at the moment.
It's such a terrible and a difficult situation, and it really does. It is challenging every country that has had a relationship with Russia, that has citizens living there that come from Russia. It's really just the most unnecessary conflict, and it really has turned the world completely on its head.
I couldn't agree more. And of course, Russia holding a lot of influence and a lot of power through the use of its gas pipeline. Germany has come out saying unequivocally that it would not be able to continue to manage without the use of Russian gas. We know that the German economy is very much dependent upon Russian gas for so many of its needs, particularly now during the winter months. So Russia certainly has a lever that it can pull where the gas is concerned, and it certainly threatened that. It was interesting that Russia came out when Israel refused to support it at the United Nations discussions. Russia was very, very quick to say, we're not quite sure why Israel is claiming to have sovereignty over the Golan Heights and what its rights to Jerusalem are, just to kind of put a lever into the discussion, just to warn Israel that it has some little things that it can pull on Israel in the event that it doesn't cooperate with the Russian effort. So that was just like a shot across the bow to Israel, saying, listen, we've got things on you that we could make life very, very difficult for you in the international community if you don't support our cause. So Russia is very, very good at doing all of that. This is going to be very, very tough indeed. And of course, the big discussion is around SWIFT, which is the international banking system, the movement of funds. And so many countries who are part of SWIFT have said, we are excluding Russia. Germany has been somewhat reluctant because of the gas issue, but it seems as if though more and more countries are now signing up to removing Russia and Russian banks from the use of SWIFT, which will create some hardship on the Russian economy. We understand that the ruble has already deteriorated in value quite substantially, and there's been something of a run on the Russian banks with people trying to withdraw their money from the banks as a result of these financial threats. So these things can certainly hurt the Russian economy, but the Russian war effort is interesting to watch and to compare and contrast it to the way that Israel operates. Russia just uses brute force, numbers, soldiers in numbers. We have no idea how many Russian soldiers have been killed yet in the conflict. No reports about it, from Russia at least. Some reports suggesting it could be 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 Russian troops already killed, but nobody really knows. And to Russia, it doesn't seem to be that important.
Which is also very frightening. It's 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich will continue covering this story. We'll chat to you tomorrow at 7:45.